Greetings, culture lovers. Imagine what would happen if the malevolent Mandarin seized control of our hero's powerful communication satellites, which contain vital military information for the whole free world. And what if Tony Stark himself is blamed for the Mandarin's evil deed? Worst of all, imagine if Iron Man has to face his greatest battle without the help of his mightiest ally, Jim Rhodes, better known as War Machine. You're lucky. You don't have to imagine it. It's coming up next.
Tony Stark makes you feel he's a cool exec with a heart of steel.
And Iron Man, all just a place. He fights and fights with his ultimate race. A blazing armor.
Iron Man.
A blazing bomber.
Hey, Chief Justice Michael Staley here, recapturing my youth with the help of the one and only Stan Lee. With Iron Man 2 grossing more than $500 million at theaters worldwide, I thought it appropriate for us to visit the DVD Verdict Archives for a breakfast Q&A with Iron Man's co-creator we recorded just prior to the release of the first Iron Man film on DVD and Blu-ray. Now, what you'll hear is a small gathering of foreign and domestic press throwing out questions and Stan regaling us with stories and memories as best he can. At 87, he might not be as sharp as he used to be, but no one can hold a candle to his limitless enthusiasm. And if you missed it, Stan makes another brief Hitchcock-esque cameo in the new film, playing, of all people, CNN's Larry King. So, without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I proudly present the great Stan Lee.
Thank you. I'm good at anything except facts. So, what is it we're here for? Does anybody know? Obviously, you don't know any more about this than I do. Okay. So, who's going to be? Who's the courageous person that's going to be first?
Let me
preface. Or am I supposed to make a speech?
We have a dual role here today. The first is obviously that, from the Paramount point of view, we are launching Iron Man on DVD at the end of the month. Domestically and internationally, it rolls out after that. But the reason for having you here is as we all know, you do a cameo in the film.
Oh yes, it made the movie.
But they are interested in you, Stan, the legend Stan, who created many of these characters, who saw them to fruition, and so on. So it's as much as anything about you.
Oh, it's the sheer wonderfulness of me that I see.
So if you want to start asking questions, we can dive straight in.
Well, I'll jump in. Are you surprised, or what's your opinion on the fact that the superhero movies seem to be getting bigger and bigger, and that a lot of the summer blockbusters of this year are all superhero-based? Did you ever think it was going to get to the point where Hollywood would embrace the superhero genre the way it has?
Never. Not years ago, but after the movie Superman came out, and then later after the success of Batman. See, I'm no good at anything. Anything electronics, I can't handle. Is that okay?
Yes, sir.
I bet they could hear me without it, but it doesn't matter. Now I'll be shouting. After these movies came out, and then after Spider-Man came out, and how successful they all were, you didn't need a house to fall on you to realize we're onto something. And I think it's not so much that the stories are about superheroes as it is about the fact that they're different. They're not what you'd see in an average everyday movie. It's not your usual gangster movie, cops and robbers. It's not a western. It's not a romance or a teenage comedy. The public always loves anything that's different, if it's well made, if it's well done. And you never quite know what to expect when you go to one of these so-called superhero movies. So I think that there's the element of the excitement about what am I going to see. And with the special effects now, when you see men flying and people walking through walls or shooting flame or whatever they do, especially the younger audiences, which make up the bulk of the moviegoers, they love that sort of thing. So now I'm not surprised anymore. I'm surprised when a superhero movie doesn't do well.
You were out here for a while trying to get this whole Marvel phenomenon kind of going, and it took a while to get it.
Oh, yeah.
Can you kind of talk about your experience kind of beating down doors at first and now seeing it turn into this, this huge
thing? We had a funny experience because before present management took over Marvel, the previous management, and I'm going back about 10 years or more, didn't want to do movies for television. I will never forget, I had arranged for one of the networks to do a TV series based on our character. We have a character called the Black Widow. And in those days, Bo Derek was a big star. She's supposed to be the most beautiful woman, number 10. And we got Bo Derek. She was willing to play the Black Widow. And I forget whether it was ABC or CBS, but one of them was excited about doing the series. And the person who at that time was running Marvel said, "No, I don't want to do it." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, if the series doesn't do well, it'll hurt our character. It'll be bad for the character." I couldn't understand that kind of logic, because if you feel that way, then you'd never do anything, because it might not do well. But anyway, I wasn't the fellow running the show. And we had the same problem with Daredevil. I had that practically sold to another network, and the people in charge of the company said, no, and we're afraid he's an important character if it doesn't work out well. So I gave up at that point. Luckily, we had new management later on, and they realized the value of TV and movies, especially movies. And then we were off and running.
Speaking of, you mentioned TV. There's a lot of the Hollywood movies. The superhero genre is huge in Hollywood, but we have yet to really, besides NBC's Heroes and Smallville, it seems like there's a lot of room for growth on television for the characters and for for Pal Media, for Marvel, for everything. So, what do you think? Do you think there's a certain character or two, or that might be, a good fit for a network or HBO?
Strangely enough, I think almost any character, how the character is written, how it's directed, how it's acted. There are so many things that you think wouldn't work, but if they're done the right way. For example, when we first did Spider-Man, I'll never forget, my publisher didn't want to publish Spider-Man. He said it was the worst idea he had ever heard for a character. And from his point of view, he was right, because I wanted Spider-Man to be a teenager who had a million problems. And my publisher said, "First of all, Stan, people hate spiders, so you can't call a character Spider-Man." Then he said he can't be a teenager, because teenagers can only be sidekicks, not a hero. And then you say you want him to have problems? Stan, don't you know what a superhero is? So from his point of view, he was right. But it just happened that I found the right artist, and apparently we handled it the right way, and it caught on. Now you take Heroes. This was a show that has so much fantasy. Every character has a different superpower. In the beginning, you weren't quite sure who's good and who's bad. Everybody said to me, "Oh, that'll never work. It's too complicated. People won't remember from episode to episode," and so forth. But it worked because it was well done, and because you got caught up and interested in the characters. And to my way of thinking, whether it's a superhero movie or a romance or a comedy or whatever, the most important thing is you've got to care about the characters. You've got to understand the characters, and you've got to be interested. If the characters are interesting, you're halfway home.
What do you think of the DACA thing, Sam?
I'm sorry, say that again.
What do you think of the DACA things with the superheroes now?
You got to forgive me. I don't hear that well. I heard you say, "What do I think of?" and I missed the rest.
The DACA path that's being pursued with the superheroes.
Say it just once more.
The DACA things.
Oh, the darker themes.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
It's the Aussie accent.
Certainly nobody could say the darker themes are bad when you consider the success of the Batman movie. And it's just a case, again, is it done well? That was done magnificently. So it all depends on how, as I started to say before, it's not a case of this type of thing is good and this type of thing is bad. It's a case of, do you do it well? And a darker theme done well, take Sin City. That was done well, so it did well. The Batman movie was done well, and it did well. You get a dark theme that's done badly or in a corny way where the characters don't ring true, it'll bomb. And very often people say, for example, you do a Western movie, and it doesn't make money. And people say, nobody's interested in Westerns. You can't sell a Western. Then you come out with Unforgiven, and it does very well. And everybody says, boy, everybody wants to see a Western. That's not the case. It's, was it done well, no matter what kind of movie? And a darker theme, there are plenty of people who love that sort of thing, if it's done right.
Staying with a genre that's love, can you hear me from here?
I'm sorry.
We play a genre that's remained so long-lasting and has so much potential still for the future. How do you continue to reinvent the wheel and not repeat necessarily what you've done before, but stay faithful to the characters you created?
Tough one. Of course, if I give away too much information, all our competitors will... there's no secret. I don't even know what the answer is to it. You do your best. You have a character, and you know the character, and you have a story, and the story works, and you're grateful. Now you've got to do another one, because it's a series. So here's your problem. You've got to make it different from the first one so that people don't think I'm just reading the same thing over and over again, but you've got to keep it true to the first one. You've got to keep the characters in character. You've got to keep it the same type of story, because if the first one did well, you know that's the type of thing your audience likes. So it's a balancing act that you play, and it's difficult. I don't know that there's a formula. You've got to really think it out all the time. I know that's the reason I don't have as big a head of hair as I used to. When I used to have to do these Spider-Man and the Hulk and the Fantastic Four and the X-Men, and I had to do a new one every month, and the problem was, how do I make each one different but yet the same, you know? And it's just something you work out in your own mind. If you're lucky, you can think of a story all the time. If you're not lucky, you just bang your head against the wall and nothing comes.
Stan, can you talk about, you know, it seems like it's been years since a new traditional Man of Science superhero has been created.
A new what type?
Superhero.
Yeah.
Has been created. You know,
yeah.
Nothing much from Marvel, nothing much from DC. I think the biggest hit maybe in the last 15, 20 years or something was maybe Spawn, that was new. Any reason why you think there hasn't been any real new traditional manic type superhero created from the comic book?
Any new, what did you say, manic type?
Man in tights.
Oh, man in tights. That's what we're through. Man in tights. There were, in a sense, there was Hellboy was kind of a new one. He didn't wear a cape, but, you know, he was new. And what was that one that began with V just a year or so ago?
The V for Vendetta?
Yeah, V for Vendetta. That was a new one. There are a few new ones. But the thing is, when it comes to the movies, if a movie company is going to invest $50, $100 million in a movie, they sort of want a sure thing. So they'd rather take something that was already popular as a comic book, so they know it's got an audience. But I really don't follow comics anymore these days. I'm too busy with my own little company, POW Entertainment. But just looking at covers occasionally that people show me, there seem to be a lot of new characters that are being created in the comics. We just don't hear about them if we're not comic book readers, and they haven't made movies of them yet. But there are so many writers and artists who are continually trying to come up with new characters that'll be the next Batman or Spider-Man or whatever, that they're always coming along. It's just you'll have to wait until the public gets tired of the X-Men and Spider-Man and Batman and Superman before you'll start seeing the heroes, that's all.
You pioneered the shared universe with your superheroes. Mm-hmm. It's the first time that they interacted in other comic books. Now that's happening in the movies, mm-hmm. Is that anything that you were ever thinking about, or were you always thinking these characters in film were going to just kind of be in their own little world?
Well, it seems like the most natural thing in the world. If you have superheroes or you have characters that exist in the same world and you're doing movies of them, wouldn't it be fun to put a couple of them or more together in one movie? Wouldn't the audiences love that? So it's a natural thing to do. The difficult thing is, at Marvel, some of the characters are under contract to different studios. Spider-Man is at Sony, and Iron Man is at Paramount, and so forth. So they've got to take characters that they can control, so to speak, and put them together. And it was the same in the comics. It happened accidentally. I had written each book separately, but then at one point it occurred to me, if they all live in New York, why wouldn't they meet? And wouldn't it be fun to have them get together in a story? That's the way it happened.
Sam,
yes, sir.
10 years ago, when everybody said about a new comic book adaptation, people would just go, not a bad one. What happened to Marvel to get this point of everything that they do, we are kind of expecting a good thing? What is this differential that separates Marvel Studios from whatever happened in the past?
I gather you all heard that. Even I did. I think money is the answer. In the past, the first movie that might have been done was Captain America, I think. And then we did a Punisher. And let's just talk about Captain America. It was a very low-budget movie. Probably cost like 98 cents. And it had a director who, he was, you know, competent enough. He had done a lot of movies, but he had never done a big movie. And when you have a director with a small budget and a script that hadn't cost very much money, and there wasn't enough money in the budget to have the script rewritten, all these big movies, the scripts are rewritten time after time after time until they get to be just right. And there wasn't enough money to get the top actors or actresses, so they had to take what was available. And they had to shoot the movie in a very limited period of time because, again, the cash ran out. And you had a movie. And also, the person doing the movie wasn't a big fan of the character. It was just somebody who they hired because they could afford him. Move forward 20 or 30 years and you come to, let's say, the Spider-Man movie. And Sam Raimi was a big comic book fan, a big Spider-Man fan, and a fine director. He wanted to do Spider-Man for years. He had a chance to do it. He was given an enormous budget, the best actors he could get, the best cameraman and script and so forth. And it turned out he was able to keep it true to the comics, but even improve on the comics. So it was really a matter of, are you just throwing out an inexpensive movie just to get something on the screen, or are you doing it because you want to get a big movie? And by the time we got into the present ones, we had enough money to spend, or the studios had enough money to spend, because they had seen the success of Superman and Batman, and they hoped they could do that with Marvel. Thank goodness they did. Same with X-Men. We got a director, Bryan Singer, who was a fine director. He had done that movie about the criminals. Yeah, and that was such a clever, intelligent movie. Now, he wasn't a great comic book fan, but he spent months talking to me and to so many other people and learning what he could about the comics and about what was good about them and bad about them. And he read every X-Men book ever published. And he got so into it. And, well, the result was the X-Men movie, which was a tremendous success, and on and on. And that was probably the longest MC I've ever had.
Yeah.
One question.
Now, most of these characters were created under the work for hire, because you guys, it wasn't creator controlled back then. Do you feel a certain sense of pride when you see these now? Do you, was there a point in time where you'd see some of these characters that you had created take a turn that you were disappointed in the way that they went? How does that ring with you?
Well, of course, the old movies, the old Captain America and so forth, they were disappointments. Yeah. And of course, I'm delighted at the way the movies have turned out now and the reception they receive. I mean, this Iron Man movie especially, because nobody expected it to do as well as it did, because everybody said, well, Iron Man isn't one of Marvel's top characters, but I always thought it was. An interesting thing about Iron Man, when we did it as a comic book, it got more mail, more fan mail from females than any character we had. And I used to wonder about that, but then it wasn't such a mystery when I realized he's handsome, he's glamorous, he's wealthy, he's very macho. And also, he's got a weak heart, and he needs care. I mean, this was just perfect to appeal to females. I had done it accidentally. I didn't think of it that way, but it just happened to work out that way.
What's it like? I mean, a couple of your collaborators on some of the bigger properties, Jack Kirby's no longer with us, and Steve Ditko seems to not want to have anything to do with the success. Mm-hmm. Is it weird to kind of not have them around to see that these things have become true icons?
Oh, absolutely. Jack Kirby, I think, would have enjoyed this tremendously. Except he'd have been grousing that he's not making enough money out of it. Which is natural. Steve Ditko was a very... Steve is the fellow, for those of you who don't know, who did Spider-Man with me and another character called Doctor Strange. Steve is a very strange individual. He doesn't want publicity. He won't give interviews. He won't talk to anybody about it. And I understand that somebody found the original artwork for the first Spider-Man comic book, and that artwork could be worth up to $1 million. I don't know. And they offered to give it back to Steve, and he wouldn't take it. And they gave it, whoever had it, gave it to the Library of Congress, and they made a big thing out of that. And they're going to have it on display and so forth. And Steve felt that all the artwork should have always been given back to all the artists all the time. And he's probably right. Nobody ever thought of it. And frankly, in those days when these books were being done, the artists never thought of it. They never particularly asked for their artwork back. It was a strange thing. We all worked. The offices of Marvel were... The whole of Marvel was in a space much smaller than this room. And I was the editor, and I had an office about this size. It just barely room for me to sit with and talk to somebody else if he walked in. And whenever the book was published, the printer would send back all the original artwork, and it was a stack like that, because the sheets in those days were very thick and they were big. They weren't smaller now. And we had no place to put them. So somebody would come up delivering sandwiches for lunch, and we'd say, "Hey, Charlie, on your way out, you want to take some of these pages with you?" And we did the same with the old comic. And we never thought to save these things. But anyway, that's another story.
Stan, when you started with Who Wants to Be a Superhero, did the audience's reaction surprise you that superheroes were still very popular, that people wanted to be superheroes?
No, by the time we did that show, I wasn't surprised. I mean, I've gone to these comic book conventions, like the one in San Diego, where there are upwards of 100,000 people attending, and it used to be years ago they were all kids. Occasionally there'd be an adult who'd be a kid's father, you know,
walking with the... Now, if you can see a little kid there, that's unusual. They're all grown up. They're people. It's amazing. It's superheroes have become... It's like Star Wars. You know how popular Star Wars are and the fans that they have. Superheroes have become like that.
You've done a lot of cameos in a lot of the films. You want to possibly rank, or which ones are your favorites?
Oh, I really love them all. I was disappointed with the one in the Iron Man movie, though, because I had a line there that they cut out. The director, those of you who've seen it, I'm standing with my arms around three attractive blondes, which was not too unpleasant. And they wanted me to look a little, be a little like Hugh Hefner. So they even gave me a pipe. I had to keep a pipe in my mouth. And then Tony Stark, at some big gathering, Tony Stark taps me on the shoulder from the back. He thinks I'm Hugh Hefner. And when I turn around, he says something like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't remember what he said. But I was supposed to say, and I got this line from the director. He gave me the line. Oh, that's okay. I get that all the time. But when the movie came out, they had cut the line. Either the movie went too long and they had to cut out a second whenever they could, or he may have thought it would get too big a laugh. Which But at any rate, the funny thing about it, when I turned around to say that to Downey, I had the pipe in my mouth, and I had this girl's head right over here, and I turned around, and I hit her right in the face with the pipe. So needless to say, we did another take. But it was fun.
What happened to your cameo in the Hulk? Because we never see the effects of the suffering.
I don't know. I don't know what the director had in mind, what Louis had in mind. But I'll tell you, every one of these seems to bring up a funny story. If you saw the Hulk, I'm holding a bottle and I drop the bottle. I think I taste it and then I drop it and it shatters and I go, wow. So that was all I did. That was my whole dialogue. Wow. Now, like any actor, I tried to stretch my role. So the first time I did it, I went, wow, or something like that. And Louis came over to me and said, no, Stan, wow. So the second time I did it, I went, wow. He said, no, a little lower, wow. So I went, wow. He said, a little lower, wow. And he ended up, I went, wow. Like, it was the most frustrating year. I wanted to emote. But anyway, that's true. And I have no idea who I was supposed to be, or if in the sequel I come back again and I turned into a monster, or if he forgets about it. I don't know.
He told us that he wants you to feel a little bit about what you give to the character. So he's created this thing. I wanted to taste a little bit.
That's funny. Oh, I taste something else. Originally, that wasn't supposed to be my cameo. I was supposed to be rowing a boat somewhere and taking them somewhere. But they were filming that out of the state, and I couldn't go. So they gave me the wow to do instead. I bet the boat would have been a bigger role. I should have moved that. Too late now.
See, a while ago, we asked you if you were going to be doing a cameo in Wolverine, and it was kind of uncertain. Were you able to shoot your cameo for Origins?
I don't know. See, they haven't started Wolverine. I'd feel a little funny about it, because all the cameos that I've done have been in movies based on characters I created. Now, I created the X-Men, but I didn't create Wolverine. Another writer did that after I had stopped writing it. So I don't know whether they'll give me the cameo or not. If they do, I'll take it, because I'm a ham. But I haven't spoken. I don't even know who's directing it yet.
Stan, today the circulation of comic books is not what it was in the day when you were writing comics. It's much smaller now. These characters remain icons and kids still know them, but when you're doing PAL Media, how do you plan on reaching out to sort of the new generation that doesn't read comic books?
With PAL?
Yeah, what is sort of the plan of reaching the kids today?
Well, our new company, PAL, for those of you who don't know,
although I'm sure you've already figured out POW stands for Purveyors of Wonder, with an exclamation point, because I don't want anybody to think it means prisoner of war. It's really fun. I've got this little company, and we're working on... We're not doing comic books yet, although we may, but we're doing movies and television shows and DVDs and electronic entertainment and things you'll be able to see on your phones. And it's just... I've never been busier. I've never been having more fun. We have a... We signed a first look deal with the Disney company, and we have three really big movies that are being developed there now. When you mentioned, somebody mentioned about no new superheroes, one of them features a new, actually, you might say two of them feature new superheroes. One of them is called, I can't tell you what they are, but one is called Blaze, one is called Nick Ratchet, and one is called Tigress. And they're all totally different, and I think they're going to be good. Everything Disney does is good, and based on my story, how can it miss? And then we have some television things we're working on, and we're doing an animated series with Paris Hilton, because I feel she needs a little publicity people to get to know her. We're doing one with Hugh Hefner, who we mentioned before. And it's going to tell the real story. See, nobody really knows about Hugh Hefner. You think of him as somebody who just likes wine, women, and song. Oh, that's just an act. He is one of America's greatest superheroes, secret agent. And I'm going to tell the truth. Now, this man has been saving our nation, and nobody knows it. And then we're doing one about another guy that I want to make famous, because he deserves it, and that's Ringo Starr. And these three are going to be cartoons, and I think they'll be very good. So I'm having more fun than I've had in a long time.
Stan, as the technology increases and the effects become bigger and bolder, do you think it's compromised the storytelling side at all?
I'm going to have to come up here again. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. As the technology's increased and the effects become bigger and bolder every time, do you think it's compromised the storytelling side?
Good point. Let me put it this way. It shouldn't. As special effects and technology get better, they should enhance the story. Now, for example, everybody is now working on 3D, and you'll be seeing a lot of big movies coming out in 3D. Now, it depends on the producer, the director. If a producer just wants to throw out a 3D movie and hope he'll make money because it says 3D and doesn't much care what the story is, then that'll be what you're talking about. But if somebody has what could be a really good movie and says, boy, this might even be better in 3D, then I would imagine it would be better. So it's like everything else. Technology isn't a villain. Technology should help. But if you just use the technology for the sake of technology, then you're cheating your audience. Then you're not giving them the best story and the best directing and so forth. And I've got to mention one other thing. I know I'm sitting here giving you all these opinions and sounding very wise, but I'm not the smartest guy in the movie business. I have not done that many movies. And believe me, I am learning also. And the things I'm telling you are just the things that have been going on through my mind and what I'm trying to absorb also. I am so impressed with people who really can make a big movie, a good movie, because the amount of work that goes into it is incredible. See, I'm lucky. I don't have to produce the whole movie. What I've been doing is just coming up with ideas for movies. I write a concept, a treatment, an outline, and if I sell that to the studio, then somebody else does the actual production, and I go on to another project, although I keep the title executive producer, and I try to butt in a little bit, but in that way, I can work on
a few dozen projects at one time instead of having to sit with one thing all the time. So that's what I do. So I'm not the biggest expert. Everything I tell you is just my opinion, and I may be wrong, although I so rarely am.
Now, has it ever been frustrating for you that, you know, you look at a property maybe like Daredevil or Elektra, and it wasn't really up to expectations, or even for the studio? You know, Marvel's been pretty vocal. They weren't really happy with the way Elektra or even Daredevil turned out. Has there been times when you looked at a property like, damn, they missed it, or...
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Sure. Elektra, it was a shame. I mean, Elektra should have been better. I'm one of the few people who feels that Daredevil wasn't that bad. And I even thought that Affleck didn't do a bad job. There were a number of things wrong. I think the it was too many stories in one. I would have played up one villain. I would have made Bullseye the villain, because he was easily the most fascinating character in that. I would have left out Kingpin. I would just let it be Bullseye versus Daredevil. But everything, and I would have left out that church business with him, and you didn't need that at all. And I would have kept it a little bit lighter and made more of the fact that he was blind, but yet he was able to tell if you're lying, because he could hear. He had super hearing, and he could hear your pulse rate speed up and things like that. I think they didn't play that up enough. But other than that, I didn't think it was a bad movie, especially since I had a cameo in it.
Is there a character that you thought was going to be the next big thing that you created that just, you know, you didn't go anywhere and you were really surprised?
No, they've all been pretty good. Well, let me put it this way, to be fair. When I was doing these characters, I never thought any of them would be the next big thing, or even would be a big thing. I just hoped they would sell and I'd keep my job and be able to pay the rent. I mean, I never thought in a million years that someday we'd be outselling the DC company and we'd have these big movies. And, you know, you'd do the book and you'd wait breathlessly till the sales figures came in and hope that somebody would buy it. That was about the extent of it. When I'm going back to the 60s, of course.
Well, you almost quit before you...
Pardon me?
You almost quit before you created Spider-Man and Fantastic Four, right? You were almost done with comics.
Son of a gun knows more about me.
Well,
I might as well get into that then for a minute. What happened was I had been doing these comics for so many years, and I was doing them the way my publisher wanted me to, and he had no respect for the audience at all. He felt comics are read just by illiterate adults or very young kids who don't know the difference. So he would say to me, Stan, you got too much dialogue in that story. Take it out. Nobody wants all that dialogue. Or there's too much going on. Just have a lot of action. All I want is a lot of fight scenes. That's what'll sell the book. And I, you know, it was a job. And for 20 years or whatever it was, I did what he wanted. And I was getting sick of it because I felt, this isn't what I would want to read, and I'd like to write the kind of things I would want to read. So I wanted to quit. And this was about 1960. And at that point, he learned that DC Comics, which was called National Comics at the time, that they had a group called the Justice League, and it was selling well, and it was a group of superheroes. And he said to me, why don't you come up with a group of superheroes like the Justice League? Well, I wasn't going to make it like the Justice League, but I knew what he meant. But I felt I'd had enough of it, and I wanted to quit. And my wife said to me, so she really deserves all the credit for everything that's happened, since she said to me, you know, Stan, you want to quit. Why don't you do the book he wants, but do it the way you want to do it? The worst that'll happen, he'll fire you, and you want to quit anyway, but you'll get it out of your system. So I did this book called The Fantastic Four, and I tried to go against a lot of the conventions. I didn't give them costumes. I didn't give them secret identities. In fact, I didn't have a heroine who didn't know the hero was really a superhero. And I had they all knew who each other were, and the heroine was engaged to be married to the hero, and the obligatory teenager was the heroine's kid brother, and he wasn't the usual teenager, but he didn't want to be a hero. He just wanted to go out on dates and make money and drive a Chevy Corvette. And I tried to make them as realistic as I could within the framework of a superhero comic. And it caught on, and, you know, that was how we got started. And again, that was a hell of a long answer for a simple question. I'm sorry.
Sam, so many of these characters, you know, over years, decades, I mean, some of them have been on over half a century now.
I'm sorry, I heard so many characters over years.
Some of these characters have been around for so long, years and decades, and some of which have been around for half a century now.
Yeah.
That at the time they were created, you might have not necessarily given much thought to them, but they've since become the basis for archetypes. And their powers have, you know, increased as the in characters have evolved, and there are more kinds of powers and variations of powers. Do you ever see a possibility of there being a creative brick wall where you kind of hit it and you say, okay, well, we've done every power there is to do, we've created every archetype there is to create, or do you think there's endless possibilities?
Good question. I it's not that I can't hear him. I get tired of sitting and refuse to stand up. I'm very cagey. I don't know. I thought years ago we had run out of ideas, but they keep coming along. I think ideas feed on ideas. I think the more things you come up with, the more it gives you ideas for other things. And, you know, there's the old saying, there are really only 9 plots in the world, and everything else is a variation of those 9. If I had a guess, I would guess people are still going to keep coming up with new ideas for characters, for books, for movies, for as long as man is on this planet. I think you can always think of something. Yes, ma'am.
Hello. I work for a children's newspaper. I just wanted to ask, what were you like as a boy?
What would what?
What were you like as a boy?
Oh, I was adorable. At least my mother always told me. No, I was... I don't know. The teachers in school always tried to get me to shut up. They said I made too much noise, and I was always kidding around with the other kids, and they felt I didn't take anything seriously, which maybe I didn't. And I never got great grades, but I did okay, because I didn't like to study. I loved to read, though, but I never read the books that we were supposed to read. I was always reading other books. I was, other than that, I was a normal kid. I lived in the city, and I went bike riding, and we played roller skate hockey in the street. Instead of ice skates in the city, there was no ice, so we had roller skates, the kind with 4 wheels on each skate. And played baseball, played handball in the schoolyard. We didn't have any money. The worst part was the summer. A lot of the kids would go away to camp for vacation. I was usually the one kid who stayed behind. I'd go to the schoolyard with a little ball and hope I could get somebody to play handball with me. Well, not handball. Yeah, handball. You hit the ball against the wall. That was our big game. And the greatest thing that happened to me when I was a kid was somehow or other my parents, when I was about 10 or 12, pulled enough money together to buy me a 2-wheeled bike. And, oh, man, that gave me the freedom to go all over the city, you know, to ride. I loved that bike. And that was it. I think I really was an awfully nice kid.
Is there a storyline from the Iron Man comic books that you'd really like to see in the next few films? And also, was there a story that you wanted to do that you weren't allowed to do?
No, after the Spider-Man was the only one that he didn't want me to do, but I did it anyway. But after the success of the first few, I was really allowed to do pretty much anything I wanted, which scared me, because it would have been nice if something didn't work. I could always blame my publisher. Hey, you wanted me to do it. Now I had nobody to blame. But now I can pretty much do anything, and they all worked out pretty... There was one character I came up with that was the one failure to in my mind. This artist, Jack Kirby, and I, we were doing the Fantastic Four, And when you do a monthly book, boy, you'd better have that book finished at the end of the month or whenever it had to go to the printer. Because if the book was late, the publisher had already reserved that time at the printing press. And if the book was late and didn't go there at the time, he still had to pay for the printing. And that would come out of my salary. So the books better not be late. Anyway, we needed a story quickly, Jack and I, because we had taken too long on the previous story. And I couldn't think of the right kind of villain. And the clock was ticking, and I got real desperate. And finally, I came up with a name. I came up with the name Diablo. And I thought, man, that's the perfect name for a villain. And no sooner had I said the name than Jack had already drawn him. He drew the greatest looking, evil looking guy you could find with a cape. And the only problem was I couldn't think what to do with Diablo. You know, who was he? What were his powers? What did he want to do? Where did he come from? And somehow or other, Jack and I talked something through, and we ended up with a story. To this day, I don't remember what the story was. I don't remember who Diablo was. I've never seen him again. And I think that was probably my biggest failure. I came up with a character that was just the name, as far as I'm concerned. But the book sold. In those days, everything we did sold. So it wasn't a good way to judge how good anything was.
Do you want to talk a little about Time Jumper? Is that a digital
comic? Say that again. Can
you talk a little about Time Jumper? Like, is that going to be a digital comic?
Oh, Time Jumper. Yeah, that's what POW is doing. It's one of the things we're doing with Disney. And it's going to be a digital character. You'll be able to catch it on your telephone. You'll be able to catch it on the internet. And hopefully it'll either become a TV series or it'll become a movie. But Disney is very excited about it. They're putting a lot of work into it. And obviously, it's about a guy who travels through time, but it's not your usual, ordinary time travel type of story. And we have high hopes for that. I love the name Time Jumper.
Sam, is there a classic Marvel character that you think, you know, now that Iron Man proved that the, you know, lesser known Marvel characters can be really successful, is there another character from your tenure of Marvel that you would love to see get his own movie?
Yeah, I can't wait till they do Doctor Strange. You know, he's the master of the mystic arts, for those of you who are untutored in comicdom. And I imagine they'll get around to him pretty soon.
They did a television movie, right?
Pardon me?
They did a television movie years ago.
Yes, yes, that's right. And it was damn good. And you know what happened? They pitted it against Roots, the same, and it got no rating. And it's a shame because it was a good movie. I forgot about that. That's right. Bless your heart. That's right. Yeah.
One more question, and then if there's one more question on POW, we can take that as well. But then we have to stop. So, Scott?
I'm just getting started.
Sorry.
Who's your favorite?
Pardon me?
Who's your favorite?
Who's my favorite?
Out of all the
favorite what?
Character. Out of all your creations.
I don't really have one. I love them all. You know, it's like asking a parent who's your favorite child. When I wrote them, whichever one I was writing at the moment, that was my favorite because I was into it. But I really never think of them as favorites. Every one of them have such beautiful, compelling qualities.
Time for one last question, but it should be about POW because I want to do them justice.
Okay. The thing is, when the X-Men came out, everybody was crazy on the movies. It was crazy about this whole idea of a team. And now that you mentioned...
And so everybody was crazy about what?
Well, teams. The team is super...
The team.
Yeah. And now we are seeing some individuals, like the Iron Man, the Hulk, Spider-Man, they are all alone. And you brought up the subject on POW that you were going to do some cartoons on specific characters and personas like Ringo and Hugh Hefner. So how do you balance for the audiences to create teams or to work as individuals? Do you think there is a moment where you should work just in one character, or is there a need to a group of characters to emerge?
Well, actually, it's really just what idea you get and what you feel like writing. Over at POW, the treatments that I write that we sell to movie studios or television studios, if I come up with an idea that I think would make a good movie that involves a team, I write it up and hope to sell it. If I come up with an idea of a good character, I do that. Or sometimes I may think maybe two characters, maybe a guy and a girl who work together, or two guys who really hate each other but they have to work together, or just one guy and everybody thinks he's a criminal but he's really a hero. And it really just depends what you think of. One of the things I'm doing involves a team. One of the things we're doing at POW, and I can't tell you much about it, but it involves a team of secret agents who have a certain mission, and it must be a secret mission, but if they fail, the whole world will be destroyed, so it's a pretty important mission. So, again, it depends whether you're thinking, whether you get an idea for a team or a group or one, and then you follow it through. There are no rules. I mean, I don't sit down and say, I'm going to try to think of something for a team. You just sit down and let your mind go blank, and then you say, what would make a good story? And luckily, something usually comes to me.
Last question, Brett.
Could you tell me about the development of Captain America and Thor and the Avengers and what you know about the next 5 years of your characters into movies?
Well, all I can tell you is what you already know, because I have no inside information. But Marvel is planning to make movies of every major character they have and many of the so-called minor characters. They're going to tap that well and just draw out as much as they can from it. So any character that you could name at Marvel, the chances are somebody is dreaming up a movie for him right now.
What star would you like to see play, like Thor or Captain America?
Oh, they're doing Thor. They're doing Captain America. They will do Doctor Strange. They're doing the Avengers. They're doing Deathlok. It goes on and on. They're doing almost every character. They have somebody writing stories.
Have they already been cast in terms of... What actor would you like to see?
Pardon me?
What actor would you like to see play Captain America or Thor?
I haven't really thought about it. I'm not involved in casting. Captain America would be a tough one. He's got to be very good-looking, very tall, very honorable, it's got to be the best-looking, ruggedest-looking guy you could find. And I don't know. I'm too old, so I'll have to find someone else.
Thank you very much.
Oh, pleasure.
Hey, thank you. I enjoyed it. Thanks.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard.